Midget on a reel two. Is the mule stubborn then to handle?
Yes, sir, but amenable nonetheless with courtesy and kindness. In particular, kindness, of course. The old adage about the stubborn mule, whilst, you know, partially correct, is not substantially proven. The mule responds to kindness as most people, and most animals, if you will, respond to kindness. And the mule, in our case, had been very much messed up, so to speak, because, as an example, among other things, we devocalized all our mules before we went into Burma, which meant, in effect, we took away their speaking to each other facility, which, in effect, therefore, had the undesired effect of a mule having to see before he would go, as opposed to be able to talk before he went.
Did you do that?
Yes, sir, I assisted to do, because elements, we had officers from the Royal Army Veterinary Corps who physically did it. My job was to assist in so doing, and I did some, yes, but I was not the qualified veterinary surgeon that you really want on this job. I had done all these veterinary courses, and it was part of my function to be present and to assist. But it was in the main done by RAVC personnel, and it was simply the cutting of the speaking voice sinew, so to speak, this alongside the jugular, and opened, required rather, the opening only of an incision, something like 2.5 to 3 inches, the pulling away of the vocal cord with the little small finger, quite literally, cutting 2 points, thereby to let this vocal cord be adrift by at least 1/2 inch. And in theory, that would never ever meet again, those two bits. And so the mule was already devocalized. And you sewed him up and you took him back and he was watered and fed and he carried on as though nothing ever happened to him.
How long did it take the mule to recover?
No time at all. He was still on maneuvers. There was no resting period at all. One only watched because of flies and the old mosquito and so forth for any blood outlet there. But except for that, no, there was no problem. No, as it were, stoppage of work content. The mule went on and on. He didn't know it had happened to him, save that he couldn't now talk.
How quick could they do the operation?
3 minutes, as quick as that. No problem at all. And it was done by local anesthetic, and he was stood up in his stall, and just as you would, for instance, if he had a wither gall, he'd be still vertical in his stall, and local anesthetic and a lance for the gall, equally for this job here. If it were nice and easy, so to do, and you were back in a RAVC station, of course, it would be just that much preferable to give him general anesthetic and let him fall and operate more slowly. But time was of the essence here now, because the decree regarding this was given very late on in the training stage, just prior to us actually leaving India for Burma proper by train. And so there was very little time left in the training program, and so it was found ever so easy, so to do, and I repeat, about 3 minutes was about all that was necessary.
Do you think the mule suffered from not being able to make a noise?
Not at all, sir, no, except when that would be unkind to say. They suffered in the sense that I saw them at a later stage when, at one particular time, we were landed on the wrong side of the Irrawaddy, and we had to get to the other side before our actual orders commenced. We had been dropped by an American outfit, not necessarily and only by mistake, but that they had a wide sandbank to drop their gliders over and to land themselves and take off. So there was the word exigencies of war would allow for the error there. But at that point, and getting back to the mule, we had 800 yards of water looking at us. Well, 800 yards is half a mile. And there was a nine knot tide from right to left. And we had to get across that bit of water before we even were in the boundary areas where the war proper was now starting. Remembering that at this absolute time, the enemy were totally all around us. They could have been within 100 yards without us knowing. We were sitting ducks, but we got away with it. In about 36 hours, one complete night and a whole the following day, and that night, we got across the whole complement of all the bones. But the mule, you see, would like at that stage to have been able to call out to his friend on the other side before he entered the water. Because although every mule can swim, inevitably, no Gurkha soldier can. Almost all British other ranks can swim in sort. But we had this major difficulty of getting man and mule across 800 plus yards of fast flowing water. And had we not therefore devocalized those mules at that time, we knew it would have been advantageous to us to have a number of mules on the opposite side calling, or talking, if you will, to each other. But it wasn't to be. They were all devocalized. And so to do this and cross its water, we pushed the mule out into the water with two non-swimmers upon the halter end, front end of the mule, one right and one left, holding onto the halter, and two Gurkha soldiers, they being the smaller chaps, onto the tail end, holding the tail. And so you pushed into the water a mule, plus its load, plus four men. And that was a repeat story. Now, I only say now, at that point, had it been possible that they could talk to each other, it would have been greatly advantageous to us. They couldn't. And so we had to use sheer brute strength, so to speak, by knocking their nose and keeping them straight forward, because they always wanted to come back. But once you got out into a third way out, into heavy water, and they saw on the other side, the other mules, sight only allowed them to go forward. And our losses, we did lose some very valuable animals, a few, but the losses were minimal. But the same mules, had they been able to talk at that stage, I am convinced, as a transport wallah that I was, it would have been to our merit, our advantage at that stage to do so.
Were they special kind of mules?
No, sir. Nothing special about them. They were kutcher, as they call them out there. They were bought by the remount depots around the villages of India proper, taken in, vetted, and made sure as to sex, etc., and illness or possible problems of illness. And then when okayed, were sent out to chaps like us, regiments rather, as we were, driver training regiments. But they were as brand new to the regiment and to themselves, so to speak, in regimental quarters, as, if you like, the British soldier is when he joins up for the first time, untrained, nothing, no background at all.
Did you develop an affection for the mules?
Pardon?
Did you develop an affection for
always, them? Of course, yes. I had that. It was part of me, I think. I didn't have to do anything at all about it. I think it was such that You see, if you like horses, a development from that into ponies is obvious. It also goes easily to a donkey and equally easy to the mule. And the mule being the product of a donkey, stallion, and pony mare is such that you have an equality there immediate that you recognize, sympathize with, and become part of. And if you like talking personally, I had no problems whatsoever at any one time, ever. But I furthermore had the merit that I could encourage the chap who did have the problem and give him the encouragement and the training he needed for our later success as a whole brigade.
Would hinnies have been done just as well?
Beg your pardon?
Would hinnies have done
just
as well?
Yes, equally well, and would have been involved likewise, yes. No problem there.
Did you have them?
Yes, we had them, yes.
But they were indistinguishable from the mules?
Indeed, indeed, yes. Indistinguishable, but it mattered not, you see. The man, a man who knows a pony or donkey distance-wise and is now introduced to a mule in the by virtue of his being, if you like, in the column, he wouldn't know the difference between any of the part or parts of the hybrid factor relating to the mule. A mule was a mule.
Were they dangerous from the point of view of biting or kicking?
Partially so, yes. That was always inevitable. Not so much the biting, the kicking part. Biting, one related more to the pony and the horse, not to the mule. But he most certainly wanted to kick if he could kick. Hence my earlier requirement, or mention rather, of grooming. I was a great believer that in coaxing the driver, as he was called, to groom his mule, he was inevitably getting closer physically to the mule proper. And he had to, at one point along the way, to come to the rear end of the mule. I mean, it is said that a mule can't kick with his front feet, but that's a lie in any event. He can. What's more, he jumps and kicks at the same time. But, of course, the real pucker kick from any mule is from his rear end. But in grooming, and you are there with to guide him, after a few cautionary words, the driver, newly with his newly acquired mule, gets to know him and uses nice words to coax him. And sooner or later, sooner, hopefully, an affinity comes between them both. And thereby comes the success of the whole column, because the driver knows his own mule, even in the dark. And that's, you know, quite something to achieve, but it can be and was achieved all the time.
Were they subject to many diseases?
Not more than diarrhea. Diseases, no, not as such. We lost our mules by wounds, of course. But our main problem with the mule, and therefore the loss of, or rather the inability for the use of mules, the mule, was diarrhea, in that a mule will forage for himself if allowed so to do. And what is more, he'll do that even after a belly full of good food, he still wants to look. But when he's done, sometimes, as he did do, in actual warfare, war proper, World War II, Burma, 1942-44, if he was to be made hungry, he would somehow or other get the bamboo, which contained liquid as well as food stuffs, and he loved it. It was sweet, but it had the demerit from our point of view that he would develop internally this awful, what we would call in human terms, diarrhea. That in turn was such that when he passed it, It stayed on his rear end, his hindquarters, hardened in the sun, was attacked by the mosquito and the other flies, and he became lame on us by virtue thereof. Front end was working beautifully, but his rear end couldn't. So when he became lame and therefore could not walk, there was no time left to help him at all. And my instructions were, my orders were, and I always did it, that night when we went into camp, I would dispatch that particular mule, having previously made some arrangement regarding the load he was carrying and the importance of the said load, be it a wireless set or medical supplies or whatever. And then I'd have the mule put down, and I had a gypsy boy from home here, from the Cornwall, UK, who was, by virtue of his background, a natural butcher. And our chaps, who loved to have meat once in a while, would, given the ability of a fire, of course, would have mule steaks that night. So we didn't, the mule wasn't a total loss in the sense that we ate at least part of him, usually the rear rump end of him. But nothing alters the fact that every mule, however lost, became a problem as to the disposal of the load he carried.
How were they dispatched?
I shot them myself. Only I. There was no other person allowed in the whole brigade. I personally did it, because you will know that if you take a diagonal pair of lines from the right ear to the left eye and the left ear to the right eye, and where those lines intersect, go half an inch above it, you are now plumb dead center in the brain. You now hold the chin area of the mule in your left hand, and with your revolver, place firmly against the point of intersection of those lines, plus half an inch, you fire your shot, the mule jumps, and count four heartbeats, then the mule is now dropped and dead. And this gypsy chappie of mine, he used to be able to use that time factor marvelously well by inserting a knife straight into the lower jugular area, and in the last of the heartbeats, extract as much as he could of the blood flowing through the system then, thereby ensuring that the meat was all the better for it, said he. I do not know myself, because I have been for so many years vegetarian. I did not eat meat. I was therefore thought of, as an aside to all this, I was thought of by the Gurkhan soldier as of Jesus Christ. I use those words because they used it. You have, sir, someone in the UK called Jesus Christ. Yes, he is God. We think you are Jesus Christ because you will put our friends out of danger by dispatching them or by putting them down. But you won't eat them like your other friends do, will you? No. And they gave me credit for something I ought never to have had, namely that they thought it was because I resisted the temptation of eating the mule that I was such a good chap. In truth, I was long since vegetarian myself anyway, because that was forced on me by my visits to raw RAVC units and such like, and seeing how animals are cut about and dispatched, and how in the village life the animal is dealt with, and it put me off forever, even though I loved animals.
Was it the Gurkhas who said this to you?
Yes, sir, the Gurkha soldier. Yes.
What did the gypsy do with the blood?
Oh, nothing. No, he just merely pumped it out. The whole thought, that his thought was that he would, the animal now having fallen and was breathing its last heartbeats, he said, five or six probably, He counted four when it dropped. He would sit on this animal and thump the front end, and the bird, I only witnessed what happened, namely the blood gushed out that much more by his sitting on and pressing the area. I did not know as to the qualities, but the words were, and the words he used, this gypsy, Richards his name was, Samson Richards, who lived at Truro, Cornwall, and he said, the quality of the meat is that much greater and better when I carve it up, sir, than if we leave it like it is now. And so it really was pumped out and went into the sand, or the earth.
Can you tell me more about Samson Richards?
Yes, sir. He died last year. Dear boy, Samson Richards was sent out to me as a batman. I did not want one. I had long since had a Gurkha orderly called Dedi Ram Bahadur, who was a superb chap for me and stayed with me all my service career, right to the end of the Chindit evacuation anyway. And I loved him. He was a superb chap. But Richards, Samson Richards, was sent out with others from the UK. He, being a gypsy, could neither read nor write. And the object for him was that at least he'd be a good batman to someone, said HQ, home here, I presume. That was his thing in life. He was a newly inducted, you know, newly signed up soldier from the UK, presumably doing his compulsory service. Anyway, he came, and it was painfully evident right from the word go that he wouldn't be any good as a batman, dear boy. But I liked him nonetheless. And in talking, I found out for him that he had this wonderful sort of thing about animals, gypsy inherited quality, that he could be, he knew very much more, I think, than I ever knew, yet he had had no education at all, just simply such as God had given him and his growing up in a gypsy family, and yet I had had months, indeed years, of training as an animal officer in India, and I was supposed to know it all. But I say again, I think Samson Richards was that much better than I was. And I can prove it at a point, because he came to me one day and said, sir, he said, we've got a pony in fall. I said, never. Because all remount depots who send ponies to units such as ours have vetted all the ponies prior to and vetted proper. There wasn't any doubt about it. It would not be possible, one thought, that we could have had a mare in foal. However, he came to me and I said, rubbish, Richie, where do you get all this from? He said, I'm sure, sir. He said, you come down. And I went down to the lines with him and he said, I can distinguish two heartbeats, sir. I said, never, Richie. She looked a bit bulky. I thought she probably had a lot of corn. She was too big underneath for her girth straps, so we gave her another new saddle. But I still thought she had overeaten or some other problem. Nothing to do with being in foal. However, he bent down on the side of her, the flank, with his ear, and he claimed he could hear two heartbeats. I did exactly the same thing. I could register nothing at all, not even one heartbeat, let alone two. But I swear to God, my dear friend, that in truth, he was right and I was wrong. Within probably a couple of weeks of what I'm saying now, quite quickly, soon, at the end of we were in Assam at the time, on our way to a place called Bishampur, where we would be emplaned to go down into Burma proper. And a tea planter living alongside received a most wonderful little foal that this filly foal she was, that this little mare had dropped on line of march. Richie was right, I was wrong. And I've always held that as, I held Richie in the highest esteem, because he proved all the experts wrong long before I came into the picture. Chaps who knew, well, veterinary corps officers who knew much more about all this than I would. However, Richie was right, and we gave away this little foal, and we still took the mare on with us afterwards. She did her job as normal. So she slipped through the lines without anyone knowing that she had been fertilized en route somewhere or other. Nobody knew.
Was he a genuine Romany?
Yes, genuinely Romany. So much so, another point about Richards on that one, Samson Richards. I called him Richie, by the way. It was a shortcut for me. Samson seemed too long, although his wife, I met her as wife later, Samp, she called him. But I called him Richie. Yes, he was a genuine Romany, and so much so that he would write letters home that had to be, so to speak, censored, as all mail was censored by the officer in command, whomever it was. I had to censor his letters, which I could not do because to me it was just all strokes and script of a sort that it didn't mean anything. There were no words or letters that such as I could understand, but he claimed it was a letter. And I even had test letters sent down to GHQ Delhi, and nobody could understand it or anything at all. And my instructions were, so to speak, not written but verbal, so I couldn't use it again, but my verbal instructions were be, don't worry about it at all. We would think the enemy can't damn well understand it any more than we can. And so I can only tell you the truth, and that is that from then onwards, as I had done before with a risk, but now with no risk, I signed all his outer envelope letters to home, and nothing ever came back at all. We had no repercussions from it at all. So we think, yes, we knew he was Romany. We think it was Romany script, and I censored it. I rather signed it, and it gave no problems at all, right up to the end.
What did he look like?
Like anyone else, he was a tall, thin boy who drank 10 pints of cider a day. I met him about 10 years after I came home to the UK. You see, because he could neither read nor write, I had to write the envelope that took this script home. He couldn't write it, so I know, and I repeat now, it was sent to Mrs. Sampson Richards, care of the post office, Bissoe, Bissoe, near Truro,